Alrighty, GM guys. Hope you're doing well. Solana is certainly doing well these days. It's good to see. Alright, well, we got a lot of questions this week, so I'm going to get right into them. First question is from Choice. Is the new algorithm an incremental thing where small adjustments are being made on the regular? Or is it more like a V2 where a big change will be dropped all at once? It's definitely more like V2 because we've always been making small adjustments, and we don't give those small adjustments a name. But yeah, at some point, once competitors began to appear and started to quote extremely tightly, which kind of hurt everyone, sort of, then we realized we had to like our, I think we've explained this before, but like V2 was built for a certain market structure. How long ago was that? Maybe 2 years ago, about, I think. Market structure looked very different then. Our main competitors were, actually at that time, I'm not sure if it was like the concentrated liquidity market makers or order book market makers. It was one of them, or in a sense both of them, but yeah, probably more importantly the order book market makers. And yeah, they weren't able to quote as tight as we were, or market make as intelligently as we were able to, because they had the problem of having to like remove their orders before they got picked off, which was very difficult to deal with, I think. So anyways, back in those days, it was much easier for us to quote relatively wide and still be offering the best price, but that's no longer the case. So, and Jupiter has their new algo thing. Jupiter is far from the only aggregator now. There's meta aggregators. There might be some other factors I'm not thinking of, but anyways, like the market structure is totally different now. So yeah, it became clear to us that we need to build something new from the ground up. So yeah, that's what we're working on. And if all goes well, we should be launching this month. So we'll see how it goes. All right, next question. Swans. Oh, I guess it was just a comment. Next question is from Taste. Starting to see some EURC volume. It's the Euro stablecoin. Is this a market where Liffinity is looking into market making? I assume the margins are slim, but the currency risk is low. Largest pool is only 300k plus. Also, endless possibilities for growth. Also, gold, CHF, is that the Swiss franc? I can't remember. those are trading in limited quantities. Yeah, so basically our stance is like we'll begin market making for something once there's already enough volume and therefore enough of a potential to generate revenue. So right now, like, our V2 kind of became unviable for everything except Sol USDC and its variants for like staked Sol or other stablecoin assets paired with Sol. But like, ideally in our new model, we can start market making again for certain asset pairs like ETH USDC. I guess we never were super successful with BTC USDC, but that certainly has potential. There's a lot more BTC on Solana now. And then like some meme coin pairs. Trying to think what else there was. I think those are the main ones, but yeah, so like the next things on the list that have potential for us to market make for would be those assets, I think. And but yeah, I mean, like, we're open to anything, so if any asset like starts to show a lot of volume, then like we're happy to try and capture that opportunity. But yeah, like, trying things prematurely has not worked out for us. So because it does take time away from other things we can be doing, right? So like, there is an opportunity cost. So yeah. All right, next question is from Aaron Morad. How are the algorithm design discussions going? Anything you can share? I think I've shared about as much as I can. Don't expect, like, you know, an article on the new algo for reasons that I hope are obvious by now. I mean, probably like not the case anymore, but initially when competitors started to appear, they were, you know, just like straight up copying our model because it worked really well. So I mean, yeah, no reason to publish how we do things. Yeah, that would not benefit us. All right, next question is from Benox. Hey, Durden. Seems that there is a big opportunity with Fogo to be a liquidity provider. Well, I guess it's not a question, but it's an implied question. So, yeah, so like earlier when I said with regards to like market making for certain pairs and how we don't do that prematurely. So building on other chains is like something that we have tried prematurely, specifically for Eclipse. We launched both Lifinity and Sandglass on Eclipse, and while there is like some volume there, it didn't take off as much as we were hoping, but it did take a ton of dev effort to get everything going. More than we expected, because like it is a SVM chain, so we expected that, you know, basically no changes would need to be made to be able to run our programs there. But that turned out to be not the case, unfortunately. And there were a bunch of changes that we needed to make. So yeah, so like while we did generate some revenue and continue to generate some revenue from Eclipse, like it's pretty small. Like, you don't see much organic Eclipse content on like the crypto Twitter timeline, for example. So, I mean, like, their token isn't live, so there's a chance that things turn around, but yeah, I guess we'll have to see about that. But yeah, like, so having had that experience, and knowing that, being the first, being an early adopter on a chain will not really do anything for us, because all our volume comes from aggregators anyways. Like, usually the advantage to being the first is that, like, people use your product, whatever it is. And then there's like switching costs, where people don't want to switch to the new project, even if it has some better things, because it's just like inconvenient, so they just keep using your product. But like, that type of advantage does not exist for us, because people just want to swap where they get the best price, and therefore they swap through aggregators, not through like the front end of a DEX. I mean, like, some people do that, trade on Radium or Orca or whatever, but it is merely because they are unaware that there is an equally convenient option with zero downside, that will give them a better price. They just don't know that. Every intelligent user on Solana is using Jupiter or Kamino's swap page or whatever, some kind of aggregator. Anyways, so yeah, there will be no advantage for us for being early to FOGO. So, like, and there's the possibility that it ends up being not worth the effort of launching there. So, we think it's more prudent to wait and see how things go. And if things are heating up over there, if there's a lot of volume, then we can go and capture that. And it won't really matter that we're late, Like, we'll have missed out on some like volume early on, but even the volume early on, like, it's not as if the most volume is gonna be early on. Or if it was, that means that the chain is a failure, probably, right? If most of its volume, like, if its all-time high volume came from like its first few days or like early on, then it's probably a failure. But if it keeps growing from there, then it's a success, and that's when we want to like go and capture that. So yeah, we kind of prefer the wait and see approach. But yeah, it's one of the potential places to launch that we have our eyes on. Okay. Next question is from the Overmind. Could you give some insights related to the performance of Sandglass, given that there is already one competitor that is integrated with big platforms like Kamino? Also, what about new listings? The app seems slow in that regard. Okay, so the performance of Sandglass is, I will say, not amazing. Part of that is because initially we had the trading fees set too low. It was 0.3%, but yeah, that was too low. Now it's 1%, and it's better, but I'm not sure, even that might be too low. Interestingly, trading yield, as it turns out, is a very different game than trading spot. So, yeah, we haven't made like much money from Sandglass. I mean, like money from fees specifically. Let's see. Yeah, and it's unfortunate that Exponent is integrated with Kamino, and Kamino seems uninterested in integrating anyone else, I assume because Exponent has some ex Kamino engineers on their team. Let's see. The new listings. Yeah, we're currently working on Adrena's ALP, which will have some ADX incentives to go with it, so that'll be nice. Seems slow. I guess like sometimes we're behind other projects for some assets, and sometimes we're ahead of other projects for some assets. So, yeah. It goes both ways, I think. It's unfortunate how much there's like custom work that needs to be done to launch a new market on Sandglass. Because those also use oracles. For example, like the AOP we're working on right now, like Adrena doesn't provide a fee API. So we have to like deduce their fees ourselves, and like build a program that can go like retrieve and calculate that data. So stuff like that. So yeah, like that is definitely contributing to this perceived slowness. Also, maybe because like the points meta has kind of died down, unfortunately. And like points was it or is the like greatest potential for trading volume. Yeah, our points markets always had the most volume compared to our other markets. People just don't want to trade staking yield. It's too stable or too uninteresting or too incomprehensible. People don't feel like they can guess where the yield is going, or I don't know. I don't know what the reason is, but yeah. The assets with the most TVL, people are not that interested in trading. Right. Gonna move on to the Overmind's next question. I doubt this bull market will last past this year. Having said that, what strategies could Lfinity use/implement to stay profitable during the bear market? Besides tweaking the algorithm, there's always going to be an aspect of trading volume outside of Lfinity's control. For example, Jupiter's aggregator also being closed source. Are there any other venues that the team could use to try to bring more trading volume to our pools? If so, how feasible would it be to pursue those venues? It's hard for me to imagine any integration other than some aggregator. I mean, Lfinity is for trading spot, right? So if anyone integrates us, that'll be for trading spot. But like aggregators like Jupyter, for example, have like they have I forgot the name of it, but like they have this whole set of code that makes it easy to integrate them into anything, you know, in whatever UI. You can just like integrate Jupyter's swap, like a little widget, or for example. And there's like three different modes, but and that beats us, right? It's like integrate Lifinity or integrate Jupyter. It's like obviously Jupyter because it's an aggregator and it gives your users better prices. And they can also take a fee from it if they want. So like I don't know. I'm not sure if you had something specific in mind. It's hard for me to imagine anything. Which is why the thing we're working on is tweaking the algorithm or rewriting it rather than tweaking. Yeah. So yeah, that's where we continue to focus for right now. All right. Lord Prinz asks, just checked the Sol USDC pools. Seems Orca has recaptured a lot of volume back from the dark AMMs. Any idea what they have done? How do you and the Lifinity team personally view the current Lifinity token price, especially since you are all profit driven? All right, separate questions. I haven't seen this Orca thing, so let me check that out. So they have a Sol USDC pool, 0.04% fee, 800 million 24-hour volume. Let's see. I'm gonna see if SolScan has a nice dashboard like they used to on their front page. Oh yes, DeFi dashboard. Let's see. I guess they only have cumulative volumes, can't look at just like Sol USDC. Although I'm sure there's like a Dune dashboard somewhere. Anyways, I probably shouldn't be doing all this digging live because none of you can see it anyways. So. Orca's recaptured a lot of volume? Well, I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical, let's just say. I mean, like, you can quote super tight on Orca, but the thing is, if you do quote super tight, you're gonna get picked off, your liquidity, that is. Like, you're gonna get arbed in the negative sense. Because like on a concentrated liquidity market maker, there is no Oracle price. So it's basically, you know, people are going to ARB Orca with dark AMMs. And the dark AMMs are getting the better half of the deal, so to speak. So yeah, you sent a image. So Orca has 24-hour volume of 800 mil for Sol USDC. And then, are these? Oh, this looks weird. Like, these are all the soul pools and their volumes. All soul pools. Orca is way on top. Yeah, Orca is way on top. But yeah, that seems weird to me. It could be like one theory off the top of my head is like Soul literally just pumped a shit ton. So when it does that, so when price is moving a lot, dark AMMs are gonna quote wider because the price is more volatile. When it's more volatile, it's gonna move a lot in the near future. Like markets have this tendency where volatility in the short term will tend to produce more volatility until it eventually dies out. But anyways, for that reason, it makes sense to widen your spreads when things are more volatile. But of course, Orca doesn't do that, or at least the AMM itself doesn't automatically do that for you. So you can do that manually, where you reposition your CLMM position, make it wider. But not everyone has like a bot that does that automatically for them. So like there probably is a ton of liquidity on Orca that was just like sitting there. And so like when people were buying all this SOL from AMMs, they weren't buying much from the dark AMMs because their spreads were relatively wide. In fact, they were probably buying SOL, maybe from arbitragers. So arbitragers would like buy SOL from Orca where it was being sold too cheap, and then that SOL would be sold to dark AMMs for a slightly higher price. And the dark AMMs are happy to buy it because they know that the Orca price is below the centralized exchange price. So they're getting a good deal. And therefore, when you look at where most of the volume has been, like the ARB volume would like even out between Orca and dark AMMs. But then the buying volume, that is like not ARBed, that just moved the price up, that would mostly occur on like CLMMs like Orca. And therefore, Orca has a shit ton of volume for a short while. That's the guess off the top of my head, but I don't know. These numbers seem surprising because there's the Soul CR7, I guess, and a few other like Soul paired with meme coins. Like they're taking up a lot of the top spots in this chart, which to me is surprising. Like I feel like there would be more Soul USDC pairs. Yeah, so I don't know. Let's see. Yeah, so I guess I don't have a good answer, but yeah, that's kind of my guess. All right, back to your second question. How do you and the Lifinity team personally view the current Lifinity token price, especially since you are all profit driven? Yeah, so it is the market price. So I think it reflects how Lifinity holders feel on the whole. So everyone knows it's below book value. And in theory, it could be bought and then like sold at book value for profit. But yeah, there's no redemption mechanism, so they can't do that. So yeah, so some people are willing to sell their Lifinity under book value just to get out. So those individuals are clearly not happy with our current yield, the revenue we're generating. And they probably believe that they can take the capital that they withdraw from Lifinity and can put it to work elsewhere and have the skill to make up whatever they lost from the discount they're getting on their sale by generating yield elsewhere, or just like trading their way to profit. So I mean that's just like a fact, right? Given that like Lifinity is below book value, like that's what's happening. Some people are buying below book value because it's actually quite a lot below book value. But anyways, I guess you're asking about my personal view. Let's see. Like, personally, it's like, it's kind of a nothing burger to me. I don't know. Price has always kind of been a nothing burger to me, whether it's above or below book value. Of course, like, each of those cases presents different opportunities for trying to profit. Like, I already kind of mentioned the ARB potential when it's below book value. And like the protocol itself has been taking advantage of that to benefit everyone because the protocol is like the only one that can actually do that by using its idle USDC. When Lifinity was above book value, the Flares performed an ARB by selling Lifinity. So the opposite. Yeah, so to me, like, you know, the token price, more than anything, it tells me like what token holders think about the protocol. And usually like it's a pretty straightforward reflection of our revenue. Like when revenue was really high, token price was really high, and vice versa. So yeah, I don't really see it as a problem. I see that there are certain opportunities that it presents. But yeah, I honestly just like don't think about it much. Although I kind of do have to because people keep bringing it up, but but personally speaking, yeah, I don't really think about it much. Yeah, okay. J sweats when new algo? Soon, soon. Let's see. Jason says those pump AMM less than $1 TVL shit. Less than $1 TVL? Really? Huh. They should figure out how to filter those out. The Overmind asks, are idle assets, those that are not in the pools, included when calculating the book value? Yes. Yes. We include all our assets. Yeah. Except like the team funds. The funds we got from the VEIDO plus the 10% of revenue that that is added each month. Yeah, so we don't add that, but that exists, and that would be added to the book value if we were to shut down. But yeah, for reasons that I hope are like obvious, we do not want to like include information about the team's funds in like a in the book value updates that we announce. But if we were to shut down, then like those team funds would no longer be needed to like continue funding us developing the protocol, so it would just be added to the book value. So yeah. Lord Prinz, so basically the LPers on Orca were possibly getting wrecked on impermanent loss. Yeah, I mean that's what would seem to make sense to me. Like, it's just very hard for me to imagine, especially at, like, if you've seen like the discourse on Twitter, crypto Twitter recently, around Sol USDC volumes on Solana, like Orca's not in that picture. You know, like they have volume, I'm sure, but like no one is being like, wow, Orca's killing it or anything. It's like all about the dark AMMs, so. Yeah, that's why this is quite surprising to me. And I wouldn't expect it to continue. If it is just like some whale LP like concentrating really tight, like that's not gonna last, because they're getting destroyed by impermanent loss. And that literally means like their total assets are decreasing. And so like they can't just like keep adjusting their position. If they did just keep doing that indefinitely, like their assets would become zero, just like totally eaten away by impermanent loss. Assuming of course they're like, you know, quoting very tight. So yeah. But if there are someone like doing that, that's good for us. That's a liquidity for us to arb against. Can you elaborate a bit about team funds being added to the book value when liquidated? Yeah, I mean, not much more else to say. It's just straightforward. So like if we shut down, then like we have these team funds, which we use to fund ongoing development. But then, like, let me ban this guy. Noob. But yeah, if we do shut down, then like there's no more development to be done. So then these funds, like what I'm trying to say is like, we're not gonna keep the team funds for ourselves in the event that we shut down. And instead they would be added to the book value, i.e. all the assets that would be distributed to everyone. Wouldn't that be more like your own money? I mean, we could like, you know, narrate it that way and just like distribute it among ourselves, but I certainly wouldn't feel good about it. And and this isn't the first time I've mentioned this, I don't think, that we would distribute the team funds in the event that we shut down. So yeah, this is just a reminder. I mean, although we probably also like didn't ever like write it down explicitly anywhere, or at least or maybe we did somewhere in the announcements. I don't know, or maybe in the chat somewhere, but I do remember that I have said this before in some capacity, so yeah. Lord Prince says, so in the end, what would you leave the protocol with? Like salaries of some sort? Well, I mean, the team has tokens, so like those tokens would be redeemable just like everyone's tokens. Every token is equal. But yeah, like our salaries would end. I mean, if we shut down the protocol, then you know we're no longer working. So there's no salaries to be paid. I hope that makes sense. Like it's straightforward in my mind, but basically, we are richer than we think, Jay Sweats says. Yeah, we can put it like that. But yeah, I guess like the reason I don't like bring it up often or anything is because inevitably people are gonna start asking. So how much team fund you got? And like we do have a healthy runway of like 2 years or so. So it's not a negligible amount. But yeah. It's also not like, you know, it's not going to increase the book value by 50% or anything, so. Two years at Durden's salary is an extra 10 million. If only. But yeah, it's a nice boost in the case that things do not work out. Hopefully it does work out and we can keep going. But yeah. If not, there is a bonus. I see the Overmind is typing. Probably call this AMA soon, so if any of the rest of you in the audience have any questions, Now's the time to get them in, please. All right. The Overmind asks, I remember you mentioned in a previous AMA that that charging a lower fee was detrimental to the AMM itself, as well as to others. Could you elaborate on why that is, since that could be a way to attract more volume? Sure, so yeah, definitely attracts more volume, lower fees. That's just a fact. But I hope you realize that volume is not equal to profit or revenue. So, like, as an extreme example, you could make the fee zero fees. And then you get a shit ton of volume and absolutely zero revenue. But actually, it's not even that simple because, so what we're trying to maximize as an AMM is revenue. And revenue is the sum of trading fees and market making profit. If you're not familiar with this term, market making profit, just to explain briefly, it's all the profit and loss from buying and selling before trading fees. So ignoring all the fees, it's just what prices are we buying and selling at? So like if our AMM buys one soul for $200 from someone and then sells it again later to someone else for $201, we just made $1. So it's a market making profit of $1. So market making profit is basically the same thing as impermanent loss. It's just that in the traditional designs, like constant product market makers and concentrated liquidity market makers, they had only one possibility, which was to lose money in terms of the prices at which they buy and sell. So market making profit. AKA market making profit and loss. It can be either one. You can make money from buying low and selling high, or you can lose money from buying high and selling low. But they only had one possibility, which was to lose money. It was actually, just by design, it's impossible to make money by buying low and selling high on these traditional designs. And that's why they called it impermanent loss, because it's always a loss. It can't be anything else. But with our design using an oracle, it can become profit. And so we had to rename it to market making profit. Let's see. So all that to say, lower fees, charging lower fees. Yeah, so we're trying to maximize trading fees and market making profit. So lowering fees means more volume, and that could work if the decrease in fees that results from lowering the fees is greater or is less than what we gain from market making profit due to greater volume. So that is a possibility. But in practice, I mean, like, we're always optimizing for that place, the optimal balance between, like, what's the right fee tier and how tight should we quote. We always optimize those two together, but so just lowering fees doesn't automatically lead to, like, more market making profit, for example. So that's one factor. That's like thinking of ourselves as a single DEX in isolation. But now there's this other effect where when somebody lowers their fees and they become more competitive, that compels the other DEXs to also lower their fees, or else they just get like no volume. As an example, say like every DEX charged 1% trading fee, which is like huge, right? Like 1% is ginormous for a spot trading fee. But if everyone does it, well then, like as a trader, you have no other choice because like every option charges 1%. It's like that's just the way things are. But obviously that state of things will not last for long because someone else is going to come in and be like, "Hey, we're charging a mere 0.5%, half of what everyone else is charging. Don't trade with all those schmuck AMMs, come to our AMM." And then all the other AMMs see that they're losing all their volume, and of course they're going to reciprocate. They're going to be like, "Oh, we've lowered our fees too." And so this continues, this race to zero of fees. And I mean, that's kind of in progress right now to a certain degree. Like all these dark AMMs coming out and like quoting narrower and narrower. Like initially, when they quote the narrowest, they get the most volume because they're the only one quoting that type. But inevitably, everyone else will copy them. And then their volume will decrease because now, like everyone's quoting or everyone's like charging the same fee, so they have to be competitive on how narrowly they quote their spread, and so on. And that's why, like I say, it's detrimental to the AMM itself, as well as to others. This like race to zero dynamic. And eventually, it'll reach some point. Like it doesn't actually ever go to zero. Because the AMMs like want to make money. So like there's a point where like an AMM, like for example, like a new AMM could come in and like lower the fee and like capture volume, but then the revenue that they make from that is like too small. And it's not even guaranteed, right? It's like probabilistic, it's the statistical. So there's no guarantee. So there's like a risk involved. And so the potential benefit no longer outweighs the risk that would have to be taken. So at that point, that's like, the bottom, essentially, where like they've reached the lowest level, where it's like going below this is like no one feels like it's worth it. So there's like a sort of equilibrium at a very low level of fees. Yeah. Hope all that made sense. Yeah, so just to reiterate the point, like we're not trying to attract more volume. Volume is not the goal. Volume helps, but it's not the end goal. So yeah, it's not the metric that we're really trying to optimize for. It would be super easy to optimize for it. Getting volume is like the easiest thing, honestly. Right, cool. Gonna call this AMA. Thanks everyone for joining. And all the good questions. talked about some like stuff we haven't talked about in a while, feel like. Like earlier on, it was like everything we ever talked about was like the details of the market making and stuff, but yeah, kind of rare these days. That's fun. All right. Thanks, everyone. Appreciate y'all showing up. And again, thanks for the questions. Have a great rest of the week. And I'll see you in the chats. Peace out.